Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It was a turning point at 1-1, I believe, that I could feel they were wobbling a little bit. They were insecure. Had we scored the second goal, I think we could have created a sensation tonight. But we didn't. And after any one of the three up front can score an exceptional goal. I know it is difficult to take to ground, but I believe that we produced a quality performance against maybe the best team in Europe at the moment. And well done to them, and wish them well.
Bank Friday, it's football on BFM 89.9.
That was Arsene Wenger speaking rather proudly of Arsenal's efforts after being knocked out by Barcelona in the Champions League. Folks, welcome to Thank Friday, it's football. I'm Ezra Zayt, sitting in for the absent Ross Youssef. And joining me tonight is, of course, Bob Holmes.
Hi, everybody.
Sam Postlethwaite.
Good evening.
And, of course, Kishanen from fourthofficial.com. How are you guys?
Hello, folks.
Now, of course, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Text us at 016-201-9000. Also, head over onto our Facebook page to follow our page, Football on BFM, where you can like the page as well. Now, we'll be taking a look at UEFA Champions League action this week. So some of the Europa League games that finished off at about 6 a.m. this morning. But first off, let's head over to the Nou Camp. Barcelona 3, Arsenal 1. They ended up with a 5-1 aggregate. And it was one of those games where it really was kind of decided by the moment you saw the lineup that Arsenal were putting out. And I think for a lot of people it was kind of shocking, but also yet it's almost reminiscent and consistent when you look at the past few years as well.
I think when you look at it, he's going on about if they had got a second goal, it would have been a sublime finish. When lining up on the pitch, there was no chance they were going to get two goals. They're so lucky to get that one goal, and it was something special. But he's becoming more delusional by the week. He's going out against Barca. He's playing Alex Iwobi, a youngster, giving him his first start. He's kept some of the good ones on the bench. He's got one of his main defenders, Mertes Saka. Fair enough on him on that. It's great to keep him off the pitch for that game. He's too slow, and with the strike force that Barca have available to them, it was a wise decision there. But he is just getting more delusional when he feels he's going to come out with a result against Barca with that team.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand the decision to bench Olivier Giroud. I mean, he's slow, and in a game against Barcelona, they're going to dominate possession, and you've got to hit them on the counter, you know, you want fast-paced players up front. So I can understand the decision to bench Olivier Giroud. But what I couldn't fathom was the decision to also bench Theo Walcott. I mean, he gives you the extra yard of pace up front, precisely what's needed to catch Barcelona defenders off guard, especially when you know they're completely going to dominate the tempo. So, I mean, I could understand the frustration that every Arsenal fan was feeling last night.
Yeah, well, I think he's delusional when he talks about wobbling. I mean, if that was a wobble.
Yeah, and that was a big call for you to say after you just got knocked out 5-1 on aggregate. I mean, you know, Barcelona's wobbling. It's the best team in Europe here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Barcelona need to lose any sleep about any future wobbles if that is considered one, do you? No, I mean, they rarely got out of second gear. But having said that, and to be fair to Arsenal, they did have chances. And I mean, if they'd had their shooting boots on, it might have been different.
Welbeck hit the woodwork.
Yeah, and got his legs in a tangle, as usual. I mean, they stuck to it reasonably. I mean, they came out with some pride, I think. I think you can say that. But they were never going to win it. And, you know, even when they equalised on the night, I mean, they were still facing a massive deficit in the Nou Camp. So, I mean, we get back to delusions.
Well, Elneny put in a spectacular goal for his debut goal, first one in Europe, first one for the club. But was there any sense that they were going to take it to the next level? Because there's always been that sort of second leg syndrome where you put in a credible performance and you can walk out of the field with your head held high, but that's not enough for Arsenal at this stage of the season.
Oh, definitely not. We're at the Nou Camp as well. They were always going to struggle with this, and to come away with maybe a draw or something would have been an achievement. And like you say, this part in the season, they've fallen out of the FA Cup, they've now fallen out of this. They've got to be concentrating on the league if they want to do anything. Perhaps it is time for Wenger to step aside and someone else come in, because they are destined for forever fourth, really.
But I mean, it's not like it was completely unexpected as well. We all knew how difficult the task was going to be going to Nou Camp. In fact, like, I was having a conversation with a couple of Arsenal fans, and they were saying that this was probably one of those games when Wenger should actually just field a bunch of players who are just pacey, who are quick, and just tell them that, hey, look, we've got nothing to lose. We're already 2-0 down on aggregate. We're going to ground where no one expects us to win. So let's just go out there and play football. And to a large extent, if you watch the game, to a large extent, it did look like that. At some points, it did look like Arsenal were just there to play proper football and to just go down the attacks and see if they could notch a surprise win. But of course, Barcelona being Barcelona at home, they turned on the style as usual. And come on, Luis Suarez's second goal, that was outstanding.
It was almost FIFA video game standard.
Exactly. And I mean, with a quality like that, as much as you want to pin the blame on Wenger for everything Arsenal have gone through this season, you've got to also give Barcelona enough credit for the way in which they've turned on the style.
Barcelona, they're going to go on an unbeaten run. After the Arsenal game, 38 games unbeaten in all competitions. And it's not a case that they're peaking too early, are they?
No. I mean, when you've got those three at the front, MSN, I mean, arguably the greatest front three of all time, club or country, it's a pretty daunting task to face them, even when they've got a 2-0 lead and they're coasting. But having said that, they weren't so sure at the back, were they, Barcelona? I think they missed Gerard Piqué. I don't think Matthew had a very good game as his deputy. And there were signs, I think, that would encourage other teams, such as Bayern or Real Madrid, that this side actually can be a little vulnerable in defence. But having said that, I mean, you've got MSN up front, so anything they concede at the back, they've got those three magicians, and they all scored, and they were marvellous goals. Incredible. Even Messi's, which looked simple, but how he chipped it over the keeper with his left foot, and he was actually on his right foot. I mean, it was like getting it over a green side bunker. I'm sure if the net hadn't have been there, you would have seen backspin on it.
Yeah, and the three of them are so happy to be playing with each other, and the way Suarez even just changes his body shape to get that volley, it's just, well, what can you say?
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the ball came over at a very awkward height, and we've seen in recent times, we saw Rashford the other day make a mess of a ball that came too high for him. Other players might have even headed it.
Yeah.
It came to his midriff, but he got up and he volleyed it like a rocket into the top corner. I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal.
I've got a quick question for Bob. Do you think Wenger's decision to actually bench Mertesacker was a smart one, or do you think they could have used a bit of his experience on the pitch?
I don't really think at the end of the day it would have made a great deal of difference.
Okay.
Perhaps his experience would have come in, but then his lack of pace would have probably countered that. So, no, I don't think, not much difference.
We'll take a quick look at Manchester City and Dynamo Kiev, a drab nil-all draw, but of course the tie was really sorted out in the first leg when they won 3-1. And what's really interesting is that there was a point in time this week when it would have been Pellegrini going on into the quarters and Pep Guardiola would have been sort of not proceeding with Bayern Munich.
Yeah, there was
up to the 80th minute in the Bayern-Juventus game.
That would have been ironic, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, you're right to say a dull, drab occasion at the Etihad. I mean, this was a historic night for Manchester City, the first time they've ever made it to the last eight. But what an anticlimax. I mean, it was pouring with rain.
Yeah.
It was a miserable night anyway. There were lots of empty seats. And Dynamo Kiev, they didn't come to play, did they? I mean, they were 3-1 down from the first leg. I mean, surely you've got to give it a go. But even with, when City were had lost two centre-backs in the first 20 minutes, I mean, that they wobbled. They certainly wobbled. But Dynamo Kiev didn't seem interested even then.
And we're going to take a look as to whether those defensive setbacks will actually affect Manchester City on the weekend. We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go anywhere. It's Thank Friday. It's football on BFM 89.9.
Hi, I'm Vicky Tradell, the British High Commissioner, and Thank Friday, it's football.
As reside here, sitting in for the absent Ross Yusuf, Bob, Keish and Sam are in the studio with us. Get in touch with us at Twitter. BFM Radio is the handle. You can text us at 016-201-9000. Don't forget to head over to our Facebook page, Football on BFM, where you can like it as well. Moving on, we'll take a look at some of the other Champions League matches. Atletico and PSV went on with an epic penalty shootout, only for the woodwork to sort of kick out PSV from the competition.
Well, this is an outstanding achievement for PSV to go up against Atletico and take it to penalties. Atletico, they're an experienced team now. Diego Simeone, he has a team that reflects his personnel attributes. They've got strong at the back, they've got pace. They're always managed to find someone to replace the striker. They've lost so many strikers over the years, they've been sold on, and they've always got someone there. So to keep them to a 0-0 draw is a great achievement for PSV. And for the youngster, Narsing, to miss the penalty, it's very sad.
Oh, very tough.
But you've got to look at the money available in Dutch football nowadays. No one's really spending there. And for them to go that far, they've got to be happy with that. And the likes of Ajax that have won the league over the last few years, for PSV to go this far, they must be happy. But yeah, congrats to Atletico Madrid again. Simeone has really turned that team around over the last 5 years. They're challenging on all fronts now, and they are a team capable of winning this competition. But going into the next draw, that should be an interesting result, I think.
But from the perspective of Atletico Madrid, you've also got to look at the fact that as much as they'd be happy having made the last eight once again, but Diego Simeone will have to look back at both legs of the round of 16 and actually be slightly worried right here, because they were unable to penetrate PSV on both legs. They really struggled to break them down on most occasions. And as much as you would like to give credit to PSV for keeping a clean sheet on both games, from Diego Simeone's perspective, that is also a mishap on his striker's or his attacker's part. So he's going to look back at both fixtures. He's got to really analyse what went wrong, because if they're really going to make it past the last eight, they've got to really do better than they did against PSV.
Bayern Munich pushed the tie against Juventus into extra time to win 4-2 on the night, 6-4 on aggregate. And that was an exciting game for all football fans, because you had the runners-up from last year, and Guardiola has a point to prove before he makes his move to Manchester City in the summer. And the script nearly went down the toilet, Bob. I mean, it was not going to be a happy ending for Guardiola for a couple of seconds at least.
Yeah, well, he was 1 minute from an absolute disaster. I mean, anything could have happened, because we hear that Bayern are not entirely happy with the way he's handled the proposed move, or confirmed move now, to Manchester City, as if that has undermined the end of their season somewhat. And they're not certainties to win the Bundesliga. They're just 5 points ahead.
Yeah.
So if they had lost this at this stage, you don't know what they would have done. It's not inconceivable that they might have asked him to leave now, because as I say, there are rumblings of discontent, and they might have felt that he was better off leaving. So he was that close to a possible real disaster. But his substitutions, I think, were responsible for turning it round, having said that. So they should recognize that at least. And yeah, absolutely, it was the game of the week, certainly game of the round, I think. Very unfortunate for Juventus. They could have had it sealed by half time.
So, and what would we say, I mean, apart from the substitutions making such a huge impact, I mean, these guys are the runners-up, and they have that pedigree to sort of see these games out with another 45 minutes to go. What do you think went wrong for them?
Well, they should do, like you say, but when you're going up against Bayern Munich, they win the league every season. Their Champions League is their competition. They need to fight for that one. The Bundesliga is a bit of a walk in the park. When people watch the Bundesliga, all they're interested in is who's Bayern playing this weekend, really. Yeah. Dortmund, coming back to that point again, but Bayern are the number one team. So going up against Juve, they needed to fight on that. And it's great tactical awareness from Guardiola. And one key move that I really thought was interesting was Kingsley Coman. Bringing him on as a substitute, it showed Pep's managerial skills. But also, this lad, he's on loan from Juventus. He's 19, 20 years old. He's already played for PSG, Juventus. Now he's at Bayern. He's a youngster. He is, in my opinion, he's a bit more of a bigger French buzz than Martial. He's
very
got
cool
more
finish.
About him. Oh, exactly. And the way he took it on, turned inside and hit it on his foot, he really got that. And to get it past Buffon, who, well, the last time he had a goal past him in Serie A must have been 20 years ago almost. That is a great achievement for the young lad. And he must have been going out there thinking, right, let's get one over the team that didn't really give me an opportunity.
But I want to give credit to Allegri as well. Because think about it this way. Juventus had four key players missing prior to the game. Everywhere, if you looked at the back pages of all major newspapers across Europe, it was always about how are Juventus going to pull off the impossible with four key players. At the back, they had Chiellini missing, they had Marchisio missing, they had Pablo Dybala missing as well. And the fact that Allegri went over to Munich and he said that we have four players missing, but that does not mean that our squad is entrenched in any way. That does not mean that we have a low-key squad going here. And I think that form of mentality is precisely what allowed Juventus to actually go into the game firing on all cylinders, and that allowed them to gain a two-goal advantage. Fair enough, Bayern did pull off a comeback. But the very fact that Juventus actually went in with four key players missing and managed to pull off a 2-0 lead at halftime, I'm going to really give credit to Allegri for that one.
From Munich, we go to Manchester for some UEFA Europa League action. And, of course, it ended up in a draw and Liverpool win 3-1 on aggregate. And I think, you know, from these two legs, Liverpool managed to score at the most opportune time. Even in second leg, we continue a wonderful finish just shy of halftime. But even Firmino in the first leg, to give you that two-goal cushion, it seemed to work out for Jurgen Klopp.
Absolutely. I mean, Liverpool clearly deserved to win this, even though United probably edged the possession last night. I mean, United were a lot better than they had been at Anfield last week, but that wasn't difficult. I mean, that was an abject performance.
Yeah.
Liverpool won it last week. They should have won 4 or 5 nil. So all they had to do really was keep their heads, and they did that. They played very well, I think, containing United. A bit like Barcelona against Arsenal, they didn't have to get out of second gear. I don't think they wobbled, the word of the week. A very professional performance.
But it seemed that, at least from United or Van Gaal's boys, performed with some sort of urgency. I don't know if it was the atmosphere or, but there seemed to be some sense of urgency, even with Fellaini in midfield.
Well, when you look at it, they went out there and they were at the, for the beginning of the game, they wanted to get back into it. But the second half was just abysmal. They turned off, they weren't interested. They used to be, you could say, the best team in the world. But now they're really going to struggle to get in the Champions League next season if they go out there with that mentality of not being able to come back. All credit, though, Jurgen Klopp, that tactic of the high press. When you saw Coutinho's goal, what a goal. He went in, but the way that they had the two other players pushing forward for Liverpool really kept the four Manchester United centre-backs at such a straight line that Coutinho was able to come in and take the defender closer and closer to the goal, that he either had two options of putting the ball across the goal or having that nice little sublime finish past De Gea. Jurgen Klopp's tactics won this game, and the way that he's gone out there against Manchester United, I believe he's the first Liverpool manager to win at Old Trafford at his first attempt. Well, he's up there with a few, I think, for a few years now. But he has done very well for himself. And for him to progress in this competition, I think Liverpool have got a great opportunity of winning this.
I mean, we've seen Klopp do this time after time again as well. When he was at Borussia Dortmund, every time he took his Dortmund squad to an away game at Bayern Munich, for instance, he always knows that the crowd wasn't going to be on their side and that they needed to play with a lot more caution at the back and break free at every small, tiny attempt. And that's precisely what they did. They had a 2-0 lead from the first leg and they came over to Old Trafford. There was a hostile atmosphere, but none of the players ever let it get to them. They sat at the back. They were very cautious with how they dealt with United players. I mean, eventually they strike United when it mattered the most, right before halftime, completely destroying United's momentum that they gained after Martial's goal. And the way in which they scored the goal as well must have taken a major toll on United's defenders' confidence, because to allow, especially for someone like Varela, to allow Coutinho to just run rings around you and completely just go and smash it in against the run of play, was something that eventually, if you looked at the game, something that United defenders or even the other players could never recover from.
We're going to head over to White Hart Lane. Spurs were trying to claw back from a 3-0 deficit. They were up against Bayern Borussia Dortmund, and they went down 2-1 thanks to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who just, I think, when he goes into the dressing room, he'll just pick out his scoring boots and he runs on, and that's what happens.
He is. He's a player with great class. And I believe 3 years ago, Spurs went in for him and left him at the airport. And so for him to come back to Spurs and do that, he really was out for revenge. I know afterwards he said, right, if Tottenham ever came in again, he'd tell them where to shove it. And that's what he did in this game. But Spurs, they're not going for this competition. So to go out and lose 2-1 against Dortmund, but then it should be a wake-up for them, because this is what they need to expect if they're going to play Champions League football next year. They need more depth in the team. They need to be able to go on all cylinders in all competitions, not prioritise one, whereas they did within this. But still, Dortmund can't take anything away from them. What a finish. Calmly just opened it up. He had 2 yards away from the defender. And he got it round Lloris. It was very unfortunate for Lloris on the second one, though. Just getting a hand to it, but from 2 yards out, that power, no chance of stopping him.
I mean, Aubameyang, you know, for instance, just a quick fun fact. Aubameyang was actually part of the AC Milan squad that competed in the Champions Youth Cup in Malaysia back in 2007. And when he was playing in that Milan youth squad, he was played right up front in the middle. When he first joined Dortmund, though, he was more often than not used as a wide player to supplement Lewandowski in the middle. But this season, when he's been used as a main striker right in the middle, we have already been able to see what he's capable of producing in the middle of the park. The same thing that he produced as a kid in Milan is exactly what he's producing with Dortmund this year. He's giving them goals, and you've really got to... And Dortmund were good value for the win last night.
It's a strange time of the year for Premier League clubs, where priority and squads and injuries come into the fray. And we're going to take a look at some of the Premier League fixtures after the 7:30 news. We'll also have some updates on some of the draws coming out of Europe. We've got to the Champions League as well as the Europa League. That's coming up after this. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
It's Dennis Irwin here, and you're listening to Tank Friday Football.
Ezra here, sitting in place of Ross, and of course in the studio is Bob Holmes, Sam Postlethwaite, and Keishan from fourthofficial.com. And as you heard from Keith Kam, who read out the full draw for the Champions League quarterfinals, guys, we're just going to get some quick first impressions. What's the tie that most fascinates us right now?
Barcelona versus Atletico Madrid. I mean, come on. Like, there's probably one of the biggest ties of the quarterfinal. If you look at the other one, you've got Wolfsburg versus Real Madrid, you've got Bayern Munich versus Benfica, and you've got Manchester City versus PSG. Now, had Man City been in a different form, that could have also been a big tie of the round. But judging by how City have been playing in the last couple of months, for the fact, you've got to go for the Barcelona-Atletico tie. It's a pretty big Spanish derby as well.
Yeah, it almost looks as if they're continuing to seed the teams, but in fact it's an open draw, because I was expecting a bigger clash, you know, Real Madrid versus Barcelona or Bayern versus Real Madrid or something like that. But the big boys, what you consider the big three, they've been kept apart. And as Kishan says, Barcelona Atletico is definitely the biggest game of the round. I think PSG against Man City is an intriguing one, because City have got the advantage of being away in the first leg, and PSG, although they do raise their game remarkably from the levels of Ligue 1 to the Champions League, I think they'll find City a bit of a handful. But of course, City have got this great weakness in central defence now, thanks to Vincent Kompany's calf problem.
As well as Otamendi as well?
Well, Otamendi, I don't think that was a serious injury. I mean, it had an effect, obviously, the two of them going off within 20 minutes of the kickoff. But Otamendi could even play against United on Sunday.
Sam, of course, Wolfsburg against Real Madrid and then Bayern Munich against Benfica, at least in those two fixtures, it seems as if there's some sort of advantage to the traditional powerhouses.
Oh, yeah. When you look at the likes of Bayern, Pep's got to be rubbing his hands now. Benfica, yeah. they're cursed. What are they up to now? Eight finals in the last 50 years and still no win. That for them to make it to the quarters, that's a great achievement. But Bayern, they have got the dominance, and Pep will be wanting this one so much. Real Madrid, Wolfsburg, I do not believe Lord Bentner is up to that challenge quite yet. Real Madrid, they're going to be going all guns. In my eyes, this is a great draw because it will really split the boys to the men. The one tie that will shine is the Spanish derby, but apart from that, it will be a great semi-final now. And to keep Bayern and Man City apart, what a great start, because if we can get them to the final, Pep going up against Man City, if Bayern walk away with the cup, he's got to be gracious, hasn't he?
Fairy tale finish for that. We're going to take a look as perhaps even the quarterfinal draws for the Europa League comes through, but let's head over back to the Premier League. Crystal Palace 15th right now, go up against Leicester, and Leicester of course could actually extend the lead at the top of the table to 8 points if they win at Selhurst Park. Spurs actually don't play against Bournemouth until Sunday.
It's amazing. 1996, Leicester City went up against Crystal Palace in the Division 1 playoff. And what was it? They were 2 minutes away from going into penalties, and then Stevie Claridge got that nice half volley on the edge of the box. And now you're looking at a Leicester team that you could say they're pretty much playing the same football. They got the young man that's travelled around the leagues in the bottom. When you take Claridge's time at Portsmouth, right, you got Vardy with his time at Fleetwood. And you got Crystal Palace with Pardew. I believe he was there that day. But this Crystal Palace now, they've gone 12 games. They still haven't won in the Premier League. Now, when they went up against Liverpool, they were very unlucky and they should have come away with something. So they'll be raring for this one. Leicester, every time they go in these games, I'm still doubting them. I'm thinking, oh, Crystal Palace, right? But then they are on such a run and they've got the players available. Yeah. Drink water, England cap now.
This is the thing. I mean, we're waiting for this banana peel at some point. I mean, we're already in the middle of March. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen.
But that's what they say about any team that's challenging for the title. Difference between a team that's going for a vacation on top of the table versus a team that's actually there determined to win the title is when you look at the team's ability to grind out important victories in games and where it's pretty close. And Leicester have been doing that consistently. In January, in February, there were still talks of them having their honeymoon period ending anytime soon. But they kept on going. They kept on grinding crucial 2-1 wins, 1-0 wins. And it's these crucial, small, narrow wins that have gotten them to the position that they find themselves in right now. So as much as punters are probably inclined to feel that, hey, this is another one of those fixtures where, you know, you could potentially see Crystal Palace come up and surprise and upset Leicester's run. But at the end of the day, when you try to imagine what the dressing room atmosphere will be like within Leicester City's squad, it'll just be there and they'll all be saying that let's go out and get the job done yet again and let's just take one game at a time and continue climbing up the table.
Ranieri, he's done great. From a team, when you go on about consistency, yeah. This time last year, they were struggling at the bottom of the league, and then they started winning, and they have gone on like this. I believe if Vardy gets one more goal, he'll be on 20 goals for Leicester City. That's the first time a Leicester City player has hit 20 goals in a season since Gary Lineker in the 80s.
Absolutely amazing. Bob, I'm going to ask you, because Spurs against Bournemouth now looks so interesting, because you know, after Bournemouth's win against Swansea, 3-2, a lot of the fans were pretty convinced they're going to be staying up. But of course, the last time Spurs went up against Bournemouth, a 5-1 victory. Will it be kind of the same this time around, or will it be a slightly edgier fixture?
Well, I think it'll be a slightly edgier fixture, but Bournemouth have been treated with the utmost respect. I mean, Tottenham played Borussia Dortmund and rested several of their best players for presumably the Bournemouth game. I mean, it's a great shame. I mean, I'm sorry to go back to the Europa League fixture, but I mean, when a team, Tottenham, were probably in the top three teams, you would say, in the Europa League, and they're playing Borussia Dortmund, who are the favourites, standout favourites for that tournament, and they absolutely surrender. Basically, they hoisted the white flag last week. And it just shows, I mean, they're only playing Bournemouth. Last week, they were playing Aston Villa at the weekend after the Borussia Dortmund first leg. And now Bournemouth, who are not, with the greatest respect, not a massive force. So it really is a shame that these fixtures are coming so thick and fast now that a major tournament like the Europa League is treated with absolute disdain. I mean, thousands of fans came from Germany to watch that game, and not to mention the fact that Spurs got well over 30,000. I mean, what is going on here? I don't know whether fans will continue to shell out good money for this sort of thing. I mean, there is a priority, but don't forget Borussia Dortmund are also in a title race.
Yeah.
I mean, they're 5 points behind Bayern Munich. Okay, you would say Spurs have got a slightly better chance of winning the Premier League than Dortmund have of winning the Bundesliga. But still, they're very much in it. They didn't rest anybody. I mean, they played full out. I mean, they're determined to win this Europa League.
But
I think it really is. Something has to be done about this. A fixture, rearranging, or something. Because it's just unacceptable that a major tournament can be treated like that.
Yeah, I think while it's a shame that a game against Dortmund was taken very lightly, but if you look at it from the perspective of Pochettino, he knows what he wants right now. He wants the Premier League title. It's been years since Spurs have ever been this close to the top of the table, or even this close to actually winning the title. And right now he knows that the last few games of the season is going to be very close. Leicester have got a small gap on top, but the games are coming in thick and fast, and it's going to be really close. And it's really easy for teams to drop points in the Premier League. It's been one of the most competitive Premier Leagues we've seen in years. And I think from Pochettino's perspective, what he's trying to do is just rest as many key players as he can. He just doesn't want to take that little bit of risk that could potentially see one of his key players injured if that comes to bite them at the end of the season when they lose out to Leicester City by one or two close points. He's really going for the Premier League title.
We're going to take a look at Everton against Arsenal. That's happening on Saturday at 8:45. We spoke at length earlier about Arsenal paying attention to this particular game, but for Everton, it's not smooth sailing. And Roberto Martinez right now, it's almost dividing opinion amongst their own fans.
Yeah, but he's Everton are on a bit of a high at the moment, aren't they, after last week knocking out Chelsea.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a real cup tie, an old-fashioned cup tie, real thrill-a-minute stuff. Lots of aggro and, you know, great home win, great atmosphere. So they'll be coming into this game on a bit of a high, despite the fact that they've had problems winning at home.
It feels like they're a cup team going back to sort of the heydays of when they did sort of win the FA Cups and everything else.
But I think this would be difficult for Arsenal, although Arsenal have a good record against Everton. Arsenal, I mean, they'll come back from Barcelona feeling, I think, somewhat deflated. I mean, okay, they came out of it with a certain amount of credit. It certainly wasn't a disgrace or anything like that. But yet another disappointment. yet another failure to get out beyond the round of 16. I mean, this has got to have some effect. Every year this happens.
Yeah, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and after this we'll be taking a look at the Manchester Derby. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm KJ, Minister of Youth and Sports. Thank Friday, it's football.
It's Ezra here with Bob, Sam and Keish, and we're going to take a look at more of the Premier League fixtures happening this weekend, and the Manchester Derby, Man City against Manchester United, taking place Monday morning at 12 o'clock. It's Sunday night, Monday morning, and this, of course, would have been an interesting fixture, you know, on any other day, but now it just seems like it's a fixture for fourth place, and it's a, such a surprising turn from just the turn of the year.
Well, now the fourth place is a Champions League spot, which Man City should be grateful for Pep for, knocking out Juve the other night. The English teams have got the points now, which means fourth spot is a Champions League spot. So it could all be alive, but what a tie, though. Going into this after UEFA Cup knockout, Manchester United, LVJ, he's going to be in serious trouble. There's already going to be posters up, let alone after this game if he comes away with defeat. There has to be something about this game. You've got Aguero that scores in all these derby games all the time. Is Rashford up for the game? Is the youngsters, can they do it? They did it against Arsenal. Are they able to go in against Man City with the same attitude?
But this really looks like one of the most boring Manchester derbies. Like, you can imagine it just by looking at previous performances of both teams over the last few weeks. Man City, for the amount of expensive stars that they have in their squad, have really looked uninspired over the past few weeks. You want to blame it on the whole Pep Pellegrini incident? Perhaps, fair enough, that could be taking a toll on the squad confidence. And then you have Man United as well, who have completely looked problematic under Louis van Gaal, for the lack of a better word. And these are two teams that have been really struggling to impress on the pitch. And now they're going to be facing one another. Both of them have to win this game desperately for different reasons.
Bob, I feel like even if Louis van Gaal doesn't come away with a decent performance or win, I think his job is still safe. I mean, I think there's an expectation that the next, you know, couple of months, it really is a formality for him right now, because it doesn't seem that the players are really responding to something right now.
No, I think he's safe until the end of the season. Yeah. The question is what happens then? I mean, he's got another year in his contract, but the Mourinho story has gone quiet of late. It did look a few weeks ago as if Mourinho was a shoo-in for the job in the summer. I mean, he's telling everybody he'd got it. But it's all gone quiet. So we're not sure. There seems to be a split in the hierarchy at United. There's the old guard, Ferguson, Charlton, David Gill, who are going for Ryan Giggs, although I think Ferguson would be prepared to go for Mourinho. Charlton is absolutely dead opposed to Mourinho. And then you've got the Americans, who seem to be looking for an outsider. Not Mourinho even. So who that is, God only knows. But this doesn't help the team when you've got a manager like that who's basically, is he a dead man walking or not? I mean, they don't even know. Or a dead man sitting. He never walks, does he? he looks dead anyhow. Totally uninspiring. And if they lose to City, they've virtually got no chance of making the top four. Then they've only got West Ham in the replay in the FA Cup in a couple of weeks' time, away to West Ham, that is. And if they lose that, their season is over. Yep. And it would have been a complete and utter disaster.
We're going to take a look now at Chelsea against West Ham. That takes place at Saturday at 11 p.m. Chelsea are currently enjoying, this is amazing, isn't it, 13-game unbeaten streak in the league with Gus Hiddink. And, I mean, when you look, you turn the dial back a little bit just a few months ago prior to his appointment, you weren't quite sure how Chelsea weren't going to lose a game.
But I think that unbeaten streak needs a little more context here right now, because if you look at their last two games, they've got knocked out of the Champions League by PSG, and at the same time, they've been sent packing from the FA Cup by Everton. So you're looking at a Chelsea side that has been on the back of two important defeats, two crucial defeats. And they're coming into this game to take on a West Ham side that have been high-flying this season. West Ham were absolutely unlucky to not beat Man United last week. Man United pulled off a late equaliser. And they'll be going into this game knowing that they're going against a Chelsea side that is severely depleted in terms of confidence. And if all they need to do as West Ham is just use Dimitri Payet in the middle of the park and his influence to just turn on the style, and Chelsea could potentially be looking at three consecutive defeats here.
The way that West Ham play at the minute is great. Bilic has really got that counter-attack down to a T, all behind the ball when players are attacking them. And then as soon as they get that ball, the break upfield is incredible. They've managed to break down many teams this season doing that. When they went up against Man City, Man City just attacked and attacked and attacked. And then they got the ball, got it there and got the goal, and then held back again. Bilic has, going into this job, I doubted him. He's a legend for the team. He hasn't done so well with Croatia when he was there. In Turkey, he wasn't the best. But now, going into the Olympic Stadium next year, there could be the possibility of Champions League football. Chelsea season, 10th place, mid-table. They're not after much more of a respectable place. So West Ham will be fired up for this. And to go into a London derby, they must be wanting this more than them.
Folks, that's the weekend preview, and now we're going to get producer Andy in with the treatment table as to who's in and who's out. And first, a fantasy football update for you.
In our fantasy league, it's a big congratulations to Midget Me, whose Great Jetsby are top of the table with 1,792 points. Saiful Nizam's LFC Trollers are second. Brian Lim's Core Studios sit third. Fourth spot belongs to Jans Lee's Year, and completing the top five is Chu Tech Wui's TW. Our top man at BFM is Craig Marais, whose champions elect are in 25th place. So as you get ready to sort your teams out for the weekend, here's an injury update from the treatment table. Brian Oviedo will have a late fitness test for Everton as they welcome Arsenal to Goodison. The Gunners are still without Petr Cech, and Matthew Flamini has a hamstring complaint. No Eden Hazard for Chelsea against West Ham. The Irons hope to have big Winston Reid back in the mix. Miguel Britos, Joel Ekstrand and Odion Ighalo will all undergo late fitness tests for Watford. They welcome Stoke, who will have Nojeda and Shaqiri, while Eric Peters and Charlie Adam will have late fitness tests. Mil Jedinak is a minor doubt for Palace as they welcome table toppers Leicester to Selhurst Park. The Foxes, a touch and go over Andy King, who's had hamstring trouble. Johnny Evans, Craig Dawson and Callum McManaman are minor doubts for West Brom, who take on Norwich. The Canaries rate Robbie Brady, Stephen Naismith and Andre Wisdom at 50-50. Swansea have minor worries over Jefferson Montero and Madu Barrow ahead of their clash with Aston Villa. The visitors will give a late fitness test to Gabriel Agbonlahor. Jay Rodriguez looks likely to miss out for Southampton. They entertain Liverpool, who hope Jordan Henderson and Alberto Moreno will be okay to play. Chancellor Mbemba and Fabrizio Colaccini are doubts for Newcastle in the big one, while Sunderland have minor worries over Lee Catamol, Jermaine Lenz and Wahbi Khazri, as well as Emmanuel Eboué. In the big derby, United could be without Ander Herrera, while City have minor doubts over defenders Nicolas Otamendi and Bakary Sagna. Elsewhere, key Tottenham duo Moussa Dembele and Christian Eriksen have been struggling with fatigue. They face off with Bournemouth, who'll give a late fitness test to Harry Arter. So that about wraps it up for this round. Have yourselves a great weekend and stay healthy.
That was producer Andy Whitelaw with the treatment table. And of course, now it's time for our pundits to earn their stripes with their weekend predictions.
The Big Weekend Shout is brought to you by Micris.
Gentlemen, let's kick off with Bob.
I'll go for City to beat United. I think
Bob, I think it's called the Big Weekend Shout. we need something a bit beyond the predictability of the fixture.
Well, I was just testing you out, actually. Are you that defeatist?
Yes. Absolutely. Really? Absolutely. I'm moving forward July 2016. Yeah. Everything before that, it's done.
Okay, I'm glad you're so confident. As we've discussed before, I think these two teams are really going in. I mean, it's not quite the wooden spoon, but it feels like it, doesn't it? Fighting for fourth place. And neither are in great form. Both have got injury problems. But I think City at home are still a fairly formidable unit. And even though their big weakness is central defence, United haven't got much in the way of an attack. So I think City have the edge.
Sam, what do you have for us?
I'm going to counter Bob, I think, on this one. Manchester United to win. One thing going into this game is you've got Manchester City's expensive players that they know it's a derby, but they don't feel the Manchester spirit, you could say. Man U may have an advantage playing kids that are Manchester through and through. They wear the red and they will be wanting to get this more than anyone in the world. To get one as... to make a name for themselves, to say they were the ones that got the win over the expensive City the season that Pellegrini on his way out. Be a great accomplishment for them.
Keish, give me a good one.
I'm going to go... sorry, Arsenal fans, but I'm having Everton to beat Arsenal this weekend. Arsenal have had a pretty rough patch over the past couple of weeks, and I think that the way in which they've been dismantled by Barcelona will take a toll on their confidence. Everton, on the other hand, have on the back of an impressive 2-0 win over Chelsea. Romelu Lukaku is on excellent form right now, and I can pretty much see Lukaku inspiring Everton to yet another win at the expense of Arsenal this time.
You heard it here, folks. Our thanks to our pundits for their predictions.
The Big Weekend Shout is brought to you by Micris, empowering networks with a personal touch.
All right, that's all the time we have. Many thanks to Bob Holmes.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Sam Postlethwaite.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the football.
And Kishanen from fourthofficial.com.
Have a good weekend, people.
I'm Ezra Zayt. Ross Youssef will be back at the helm on Monday after he's done crying from the exit of Manchester United at the Europa League. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Hi, I'm Lim Tiong Kim from National Football Development Programme. Thank Friday is football.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.